In the little Vermont village where I once taught school, Pierce's General Store was one of the centers of town life. It was the place where people came and go, went, and found out about the latest gossip and things to catch up on. And I happened to be in the store one day when a newcomer in town, a woman who had moved from Chicago with her family, was talking to Glendon Pierce. Glendon, Gordon, and Marjorie Pierce were the three siblings who had run this store for many years. And she was the mother of one of my students, so I had already met her. And she was inquiring about a little church in the village. It was a typical-looking New England white-steepled church. And she said, Glendon, well, what kind of church is it? And he said, oh, it's a very friendly church. And she said, okay. Good, that's good to know. But what kind of church is it? And Glendon said, we're very welcome. I think Glendon was one of the weakest at the time. And he went on to talk about how much she'd be embraced if she happened to come to church. I think she tried one more question, but she slowly realized that she wasn't going to get the answer she was looking for. So she went on with her shopping down an aisle, and I walked down the aisle, and I said to her, so actually, it's a congregational church. It's a United Church of Christ. And I said, but it is the one church in town. And so it is very welcoming, and you'll find folks there from a variety of backgrounds if you decide to come. And she, of course, did decide to come, and her family got there. What kind of church is this? We could answer that question in any number of ways. We could say, oh, we're a friendly church. We could say we're a welcoming church. We could say we're a relatively small parish, and you'll get to know people very quickly. We could say we're an Episcopal church. But on this Sunday, I'd like to suggest another description, another accurate definition of who we are. What kind of church is this? We're a broken church. Now, by that, I don't mean that some of the windows need repair. By that, I don't mean that parish house paint, yes, indeed, is peeling, and we need to refresh it and renew it. But we are a broken church. For an essential part of who we are is to define ourselves as part of the body of Christ. We are part of the body of Christ, then we are a community that is consistently being taken up by God, being blessed by God, being broken by God, and being given to the world. To take, to bless, to break, and to give. Those are the four actions that we celebrate each Sunday at the Eucharist. That is the pattern of Jesus' life itself, that he took upon full human creaturehood, returned it as a blessing to God, loving God with heart, soul, mind, and strength, allowing himself to be broken as the bread of life for the world, and then to be given. Now, it's not good advertising to go out and say, come to church because we're a broken church. Some of you know that we got a new car recently, and on a trip earlier in the summer, at about 9,000 miles on the odometer, the car simply died. Engine completely blown. When you buy a new and shiny car, you don't expect things to break. We were very frustrated. We were very annoyed, very upset with the dealer. And yet, here on Sunday mornings, we come expecting things to be broken. We can spend an inordinate amount of energy in our lives trying to deny that, but part of the reality of life is that life is fragile. Things break, bones break, peoples break. When I make pastoral calls at a nursing home, I know I can spend a fair amount of energy walking down those halls, convincing myself that when I look at some of the circumstances of other people's lives, that is not going to happen to me. I am going to exercise. I am going to eat well. I am going to take care of myself. And somehow I engage in a magical kind of thinking that thinks if I do all those things, I may not lose my memory. I may not have a stroke. But life is fragile. Things get broken. And then there is also the other reality of human life, human sin. If you've been listening to the Old Testament lessons these last few weeks, you may be wondering, why do we hear these odd readings? And yet those chunks of chapters are the story of David, David the king, who's presented to us as a ruddy youth, as the model for what the monarchy will be, as the hero of Israelite faith. And yet, as the story has unfolded, we have seen his life slowly begin to unravel. The brokenness of unfaithfulness to his wife. His son, in this week's lesson, Absalom, who rebels against him and actually battles against him. And there, as David sends out his troops to defeat the enemy, he says, "Be gentle with the man Absalom." But Absalom dies. And David goes to his chamber, and he weeps in grief. Our lives involve brokenness, either caused by ourselves, caused by others. And yet into the midst of that human tragedy comes Jesus Christ and offers himself as bread, as life for the world. And on that morning Thursday, when he gathered with his disciples, he knew the breaking apart that was about to come for his own life, and what his choice in that moment and in that time, what his choice is to be incredibly intimate with his friends. As John says, having loved them in the world, he loves them to the end. And he shows what God's sacrificial love will look like by being hung upon a cross. In the brokenness, we find love. In the brokenness, we find bread. And we find healing. We find transformation. And in fact, the Christian faith really begins on that night. It doesn't begin in the manger of Bethlehem, but rather in a man having a meal with friends, breaking bread, and saying, God's love looks like this. Some of us were here on Thursday night, about 60 of us gathered to celebrate the Feast of the Transfiguration, a feast in which we behold Christ in radiant glory upon the mountaintop, surrounded by Moses and Elijah. And there are times when we seek to behold God in the majesty and awe of the creation and in transcendent moments like that. But our reminder each Sunday when we come to the altar is that we also may behold Christ in brokenness. And I realize as I look back on Thursday, I was getting ready for that evening. We were going to have guests here. I wanted us to be at our best. And I knew that we would see and behold Christ in our gathering together. I was wanting, desiring to see Christ in glory. And that morning at about 10 o'clock, I walked into the church and there was someone up in the balcony praying. And it turned out to be a young man. He came down and we started to talk. You know the names that we often attribute, transient, homeless, person in need. And we talked for a bit. I gave him some food. He wanted to stay in church and rest and pray a while, and I did. Let him do that. And I'll be absolutely honest with you to let you know that I came back a couple of times thinking, has he moved on his way? Has he found another place to go? And eventually he did. And he thanked me for this place where he could rest and where he could pray. And by that evening I realized I had beheld Christ. I had beheld Christ in glory, but in need, in brokenness, in desire. And so may we, as we move through our lives together, as we come to this altar today, and as we go out from this place to confront, yes, illness and challenges and broken hearts in our lives and in the lives of others, and in meeting strangers in need. We are a broken church because we are fed and nourished and blessed in this place to be that bread. for the world. So I invite you to come to the table today in whatever state you are. And especially, if there is tension, if there is stress, or any sense of a breaking point in your life, know that Christ generously offers the love and presence of God to you and me, so that we may be bread.